This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
I'm Margaret Flinter.
Margaret, I'm out in Colorado with some friends, one who's going to be a United States senator and another who's going to be the governor of Colorado. And, you know, there was a lot of buildup, a lot of money spent, and I think there's been some shift in the House of Representatives. I'm not sure there was the sea change that people predicted.
Well, congratulations to those fine folks from Colorado. And, of course, we're very proud to say that they both have strong connections to Connecticut and to healthcare, to Wesleyan University and to Middletown. So congratulations to Governor Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett.
It is very, very good news. And, you know, it was late night across the country. I know we're still counting ballots in Connecticut, and they're still counting ballots in Washington State. So coast to coast, it was a little closer than people thought in some areas and blowouts in others. Clearly, there will be a change in the House of Representatives. And there's concern in terms of health care reform. Not that there will be huge changes in the legislation, but there might be an effort to limit funding.
Well, you know, I agree with you. A huge change, but I think I'd stop short of saying a seismic change, maybe. The fact that the Democrats retain control of the Senate certainly bodes well for things moving forward. And, you know, Mark, there's so much that's already been put into motion as I look around what's been accomplished already. Most of the states working on setting up their health insurance exchanges, the prevention bill already funding new directions in preparing health professionals for the future, the HIT, the pre-existing conditions. So a lot going forward, much of which we've covered over the past year and much of which we've interviewed people who we're hearing about on the national news last night. We've interviewed on the show over the past year.
That is true, and we're going to keep an eye on all the changes that will start happening in January when the new Congress is sworn in, but we will also be keeping our eyes on the state houses as they start to implement this. And I think as the temperature cools down a little, people are going to understand at the end of the day we still have a problem we need to correct in healthcare, and I think the reform bill does a good job at it, and yet there are always changes that can be made to make it even better.
Well, by the time you get back to Connecticut, we may know who's the next governor of Connecticut. We don't know that as of this moment, as the show is getting ready to go on air, but hopefully we'll find that out soon. We know the states will continue to be laboratories for innovation, and that we'll be, over the coming months, again, focusing both on reform and innovation on Conversations on Healthcare.
Margaret, let's turn now to today's guest, Rosemary Gibson, who's a national leader in patient safety and quality healthcare. She's also written books. Her most recent is called The Treatment Trap, How the Overuse of Medical Care is Wrecking Your Health and What You Can Do to Prevent It. You may also recall her first book, Wall of Silence, the untold story of the medical mistakes that kill and injure millions of Americans. We're happy she can join us today.
And no matter what the story, you can hear all of our shows on our website, chcradio.com. Subscribe to iTunes and get our show regularly downloaded, or if you'd like to hang on to our every word and read a transcript of one of our shows, come visit us at chcradio.com. And you can become a fan of Conversations on Healthcare on Facebook and even follow us on Twitter.
And as always, if you have feedback, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. Before we speak with Rosemary Gibson, let's check in with our producer, Lauren Bonner, with Headline News.
I'm Lauren Bonner with this week's Headline News. Republicans gain control of the House after Tuesday's midterm elections, but Democrats remain in control of the Senate. It was a big loss for Democrats and their signature legislative accomplishment, health reform. Some of the law's biggest supporters lost, while the House Democrats who had opposed the law won seats. Arizona and Oklahoma passed ballot initiatives pushing back against the individual mandate, but a similar Colorado measure failed. Exit polls from Tuesday night showed health reform as the second most important issue for voters after the economy. Federal officials from the Department of Health have announced a new grant program intended to help states make implementing health reform a little easier. HHS's Early Innovates contest will reward states that lead the way developing the information technology infrastructure needed to operate the health insurance exchanges that will be available in 2014. The IT systems in the exchange will be handling a variety of complex transactions, like helping consumers find the right health plan, determining eligibility, enrolling people in plans, and administering subsidy payments. The grant contest comes in response to states' concerns over the enormous task of developing the IT systems in just 3 years and amid tight state budgets. HHS said it will award grants to five entities. This could be individual states or a coalition of states. The winning systems will be used as models for other states to follow. The two-year grants will be awarded in mid-February 2011. A panel convened by the Institute of Medicine will be meeting this month to begin considering what kind of preventative care for women should be covered at no cost under the new healthcare law. The big question is whether birth control should be considered preventative care. Dr. Jeffrey Peipert from Washington University's Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology says he's glad to hear the healthcare reform bill as it's written includes free contraceptives for women.
It's hard for me to believe that our many insurance companies will cover Viagra, but they won't cover something like contraception. I think family planning and contraception are essential components of any healthcare reform.
For many medical and public health experts, there's no debate. But the U.S. Catholic bishops have weighed in, and they strongly oppose any requirement to cover contraceptives or sterilization as preventative care, arguing that pregnancy is a healthy condition, not an illness. One option on the table is allowing insurance plans wide discretion on meeting the coverage requirement, but how the Obama administration will apply the law remains to be seen. The Department of Health will make a final decision in August 2011. This week on Conversations on Healthcare, we're discussing the overuse of medical treatment. A recent study conducted by the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan found that patients hear far more from doctors about the pros than the cons of medications, tests, and surgeries. In addition, physicians tend to offer opinions, not options, and rarely do they mention to patients that they can decide not to do anything. The study surveyed more than 3,000 patients aged 40 and older and asked the subjects about decisions they made with healthcare providers within the past 2 years regarding common medical issues like screening tests for breast cancer, taking prescription drugs for high cholesterol, or having surgery for knee or hip replacement. The study found that doctors, nurses, and others were much more likely to talk up the advantages of a treatment or test while skipping the negatives. For instance, only 20% of the patients who discussed breast cancer screening said they heard anything about possible downsides, such as false positive results, while 50% said they heard a lot about the pros of screening. Health policy experts consider it vital that patients fully understand both the benefits and the risks of medicine and that they have the right to say no to suggested treatment. Let's turn now to our interview with Rosemary Gibson, who can tell us more about the overuse of medical treatment in our healthcare system and what can be done about it.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Rosemary Gibson, a national leader in patient safety and healthcare quality and author of the book, The Treatment Trap, How the Overuse of Medical Care is Wrecking Your Health and What You Can Do to Prevent It. Welcome, Rosemary. The Institute of Medicine has acknowledged this uniquely American phenomena in healthcare overuse. I think the IOM defines overuse as situations in which the potential for harm of healthcare services exceeds the possible benefit. And while the overuse of drugs is often what comes to mind first, you point to a number of common medical procedures that are overused and may lead to more harm than good. Can you start by telling us what led you to this subject, and are there particular areas in healthcare where you found the problem of overuse particularly striking?
I got into this work after reading a report from the Commonwealth Fund. They had surveyed Americans, and 32% of people said they've had medical care they thought was unnecessary. I thought that was a very interesting statistic. So I started asking people two questions. Have you ever had medical care you thought was unnecessary? Have you ever declined treatment options that you thought were a bit over the top? And did you find a medically appropriate alternative? The responses to these questions has been extraordinary. It turns out that there is a very large segment of the population. They're typically, they have good insurance, they're fairly well educated, they do their homework, that are finding that they're receiving medical care that really they think is not good for them, and that could cause more harm than good. And these are people who are giving great thought. They're not doing this cavalierly. They're getting second opinions, third opinions, really doing their homework. So that's how I got into this. The areas where there is significant overuse ranges certainly from medication overuses off the charts. The overuse of surgery is especially pronounced. Consumer Reports said back surgery was the most overused surgery in the country, and it's continuing to increase.
Rosemary, you are an early pioneer and advocate in patient safety and quality of care, and certainly the issue of overuse is completely intertwined with patient safety because virtually every treatment or procedure carries risks to the patients or the potential, at least, for an error or a bad reaction. We've talked on other shows with guests about shared decision-making, making sure the patient and the family is involved in making decisions and choices about treatments and procedures. Is this a useful strategy, do you think, in approaching this problem of overuse?
I think shared decision making is a wonderful approach that should take place in every conversation about every decision. The question is, how do we get from where we are now to where we need to be? And there's a long road to go there. There are some wonderful tools out there for decision aids, but they're not directly accessible to the public. We've got to find a way to make these tools to enable these conversations. You know, there are videos of, you know, real-life patients who've made decisions, who talk about the treatment options, the risks and benefits. Those are wonderful things. We've got to find a way to get them to people when they need them, when they have to make a major medical decision.
You know, Rosemary, in addition to the book being a guide, you give 20 smart steps for consumers. You also share a very compelling story of an individual, an elderly gentleman, Mr. Good, who was admitted for knee surgery that perhaps wasn't really necessary and unfortunately died from complications. It seems to me that a major problem there was coordination among specialists and perhaps the lack of involvement of a primary care provider who really knew the patient. And we've been talking a lot about patient-centered medical homes. Do you think this model has a role to play in reducing overuse?
If there's a well-functioning medical home with primary care providers that this gentleman, who we call Mr. Good in the treatment trap, went to instead of going directly to a surgeon, an orthopedic surgeon, there's no question that that surgery would never have taken place because it was entirely inappropriate given his medical condition. So the medical home concept, if played out as envisioned, is an absolutely critical step forward. If we look at all the major countries in the world, they found the basis for their healthcare system is primary care. And 70 to 80% of physicians are primary care doctors. In this country, it's the opposite. Most are specialists. The good news is with healthcare reform is that a nurse practitioners are going to be playing an even greater role in nurse-managed care to provide primary care for patients. That's exactly the direction where we need to be going. Primary care is an antidote to all of this overuse that's causing more harm than good.
Rosemary, in the treatment trap, and as you just suggested, certain treatments are or procedures are particularly overused and can do harm. Back surgery is one, coronary bypass surgery another, and of course, in the past year, we've been treated to wildly differing recommendations on the value as well as the frequency for mammogram screening. So if the public understands anything, it's probably that there are very few absolutes in healthcare, and what we know today may be contradicted by new research or new science tomorrow. Given that, it's no surprise that patients want to rely on their doctors and healthcare providers for expert recommendations. But who do their healthcare providers rely on? And what's the role of comparative effectiveness research in all of this for healthcare professionals?
Two things. First of all, one way that I've started communicating to the public all on this, which we talk about in the treatment trap, is using a traffic light as an example of the types of decisions we have to make. Green light care is care you always want to get. Yellow light care is like the mammogram issue for women in their 40s. Should I or shouldn't I? There's some uncertainty. Women have different tolerances for risk, different histories in their family. So all of those things need to be taken into account. And then finally, there's red light care, and that's care you should never get. Healthcare professionals can, and primary care providers in particular, can go a very long way to guiding people to where they should go to get the care that's appropriate for them. Comparative effectiveness research can provide extraordinary information on what works and what doesn't. And contrary to what's been written out there that the public is concerned about evidence-based medicine, I will bet that there's not a single patient when they're lying on a gurney before they're going into an operating room who doesn't want their physician or surgeon or whomever, their team, to, they want them only to do those things for which there is evidence. But I think comparative effectiveness research will only go so far. Where I believe we need to go is registries. And what that is if you're having back surgery, your physician along with other physicians will track the outcomes over a period of time of that surgery for you and hundreds of other patients so we find out what works. This is an approach that was used to treat and learn what does work for childhood cancer and accounts for the fact that we've made so much progress in a relatively short period of time for children. That's an approach that has worked for them, it's worked for cystic fibrosis, and we should apply that in addition to comparative effectiveness research to healthcare today.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Rosemary Gibson, author of The Treatment Trap, How the Overuse of Medical Care is Wrecking Your Health and What You Can Do to Prevent It. Rosemary, the subject of overuse raises a number of issues that were considered during the crafting of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and are still being debated now that legislation is passed. The legislation addresses patient safety, quality, and effectiveness of care. In the public's mind, though, there seems to be a persistent worry that the government or perhaps government insurances will establish the rules for what a patient can and can't have done under insurance versus it being the prerogative of their doctor. You followed the healthcare debates closely. Was the subject of overuse specifically considered in the development of this legislation?
That's a very interesting question. Early on in the dialogue, President Obama used the term overuse. Peter Orszag, the head of the Office of Management and Budget, used the term. But after a while, you didn't hear it anymore. And I think that's in part because it's not politically correct among the established interest in the medical industrial complex. It shows that a flaw in it. And also, while there have been some wonderful patient safety components of the health reform legislation, they are still small steps. And we're just beginning to put our toe in the water. We've got to move a lot faster if we want to provide high-quality care to people in a way that's affordable. So it got us started, but we still have a long way to go.
Rosemary, in your career, you've been no stranger to challenging issues in healthcare. You've been a leader in advancing the concepts and the use of palliative care, and as program officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we're one of the leaders of their strategy to bring palliative care into the mainstream. And certainly that has required an enormous investment in education and training, not just at the research and academic health center level, but really at the level of community hospitals and individual healthcare providers and practices. What's the similarities here with the issue of overuse? Will we need a similar strategy around training and education at the frontline level? And where do you see this and how do you see this being incorporated into training and practice of the next generation as well as the current one?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, first of all, I think we need some good research. And let me tell you this, your listeners, about this extraordinary study that came out in New England Journal of Medicine. It was done very recently at the Mass General Hospital. These were patients with metastatic lung cancer. And there were two groups of people, those who had regular oncology care and those who had regular oncology care, but also early palliative care, early attention to their symptoms, expression of their wishes for care, and also they had less aggressive treatment. It turns out that the people who had less aggressive care and early palliative care, these are people with metastatic lung cancer, they lived nearly 3 months longer than those people who have standard oncology care. In other words, on the flip side of it is those who had standard oncology care, they died sooner. What we need is more research that points out the harm from overuse, not just in this arena, but in other aspects, whether it's back surgery, and there have been some studies coming out on that. But how to change culture, I think we're going to need to have some, and Medicare has started to do this with some performance measures. We're overusing diagnostic imaging like CT scans. And we saw that a new NCI study came out showing that that's causing 29,000 excess cancers a year just from the overuse of CT scans, and they estimate 15,000 deaths. So I think we need a combination of strategies. It's education and training. It's informing the public through getting these stories out in the media through the Associated Press, picked up by newspapers around the country. And also we need shared decision-making. All of these components are needed to begin to change the system. That's what we did with patient safety. In Wall of Silence, the book I did on putting a human face on adverse events, we began to make progress on patient safety through all of those means, educating the public, engaging the media, and educating and training physicians and nurses and other healthcare professionals in patient safety.
Rosemary, when you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovation, and who should our listeners at Conversations on Healthcare be keeping an eye on?
Well, I'm excited about the role of nurse practitioners going forward. I think they have the power to transform healthcare and to bring sort of a common sense approach to it, particularly in primary care. I think it's going to be a wonderful thing. There are fewer and fewer physicians going into primary care, and that opens up the opportunity for nurse practitioners to come in and do what they're trained well to do, to provide high-quality care to people. What I'm intrigued by also is the role of thoughtful consumers who are beginning to change things. I look at the StopHospitalInfection.org campaign led by Consumers Union, their Safe Patient Project. I believe that that campaign, started in 2004, has been the key factor that has put hospital infections out there as a public issue, called for public reporting and accountability, and led to Secretary Sebelius saying we need, a 30% reduction by 2015 or so in hospital-acquired infections. That's a great thing, but that only happened because the public organized, pushed for it. I don't think the change can come from within healthcare. It has to come externally, the pressure on it. As Isaac Newton said, an object at rest remains at rest until an external force is applied. That's what healthcare needs today, and that's what we try to say in the treatment trap.
Today, we've been speaking with Rosemary Gibson, national leader in patient safety and healthcare quality, and author of the book, The Treatment Trap, How the Overuse of Medical Care is Wrecking Your Health and What You Can Do to Prevent It. Rosemary, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations today.
Oh, thank you so much. And let me say, Treatment Trap, we donate proceeds to patient groups because it's the right thing to do, and the book is available on Amazon.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
This week's bright idea focuses on a Sacramento, California program. It's bringing together doctors and high school students to learn about culturally competent healthcare. The Cultural Awareness and Community Health Education Outreach Project is a partnership between Kaiser Permanente and students in Valley High School's Health Tech Academy. The goals are twofold: educating physicians about culture's impact on healthcare and healthcare delivery, but also increasing the local community's access to culturally specific medical information. Kaiser Permanente physicians meet with Health Tech Academy students every month, providing support and information while the students themselves develop community presentations on a whole variety of culturally specific medical problems. This year, students were divided into five groups: Hmong, African American, Filipino, and Latino. One of their first tests involved a community survey. Based on their findings about their own community's common healthcare problems and prevailing attitudes towards healthcare, each group then chose a specific topic to research. For example, one of the Latino groups is studying diabetes, a disease that affected many of their relatives. In addition to giving students firsthand experience researching community health problems and recommending changes, the program also provides local community members with healthcare information in a uniquely accessible way. At the end of the school year, students will deliver their presentations in a variety of community settings, including town hall meetings and health fairs. Well-equipped with a year's worth of research, they'll also share what they've learned in more informal settings, like at the family dinner table or in the car while driving with a parent. Community members will learn from young people who they know and trust and who are often better than physicians at presenting complex medical information. And at the same time, doctors will learn from students about how to provide better and more culturally competent health care. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.